It's Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports. We're recording the show in two segments this week.
This is the next level.
This is really next level. It's not preferred.
No.
However, we will be in the studio twice in case anybody wants to drop by, take pictures with us. We can sign autographs.
Yeah, we can make ourselves available.
Hansen can autograph his books. I mean, they're bound with the finest leather.
Yeah.
And his apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Potentially. I mean, you just have to come and find out.
Yes. So a lot going on in the world of sports. I indicated this in my email to you earlier this week. I don't want to talk about Serena Williams, even though I just did.
So we won't.
No. I only like to talk about happy things. No, I'm not even saying that. I guess I'm not shying away from anything. I just, going back to what we talked about last week, I don't have any hot takes. And frankly, with this one, my brain has been cluttered with so many other things that I haven't been paying attention to it. However, I think we were all hoping for a different outcome. You're all hoping for a storybook ending. None of us got a storybook ending. However, you never know what the future will hold. And hopefully we will. And I would be shocked if we didn't see Serena in many other Grand Slam finals as well.
She'll be back.
And she will.
Nevertheless, despite all that, we do have a lot of fun topics to address.
Oh, yeah, we have a ton of fun topics. So I guess first and foremost, because we do this every week, the Grant Levine watch continues. And chances are this is the last Grant Levine watch that we will have. We'll probably have him on in the next few weeks, I would wager, because he'll be back in town. But the Grand Junction Rockies. I'm wearing the shirt.
Yes, you are. It looks sharp.
I'm trying. But they are down 1-0 in the Pioneer League finals.
Best of three.
Best of three.
Got to win the next two.
Now you go to Great Falls, Montana, and you have to win the next two.
It's all on the line right here.
All for all the marbles. And I guess closer to home, well, we'll get back to that. They play tonight.
This is Thursday,
that right?
Correct.
This is Thursday. They play tonight. So by the time this show airs on Saturday, the outcome will no longer be in doubt. The Pioneer League will have crowned a champion.
Unless there's a rainout, but yep, that's what we're going to expect.
Yes. And I guess closer to home, the Fisher Cats are on the verge. They won game one of the Eastern League Finals. I don't remember how the rest of the playoff shakes out. Do you know that?
I don't.
So while we are talking about that, or while we are talking about some of this stuff, I'll take a look. But thinking about the Pioneer League, Grant in game one kind of went according to Hoyle. He went 0-for-3, which we don't like to see necessarily. That's rare.
That's extremely rare.
But two walks. So
400 on base.
400 on base percentage. So Grant is doing well in the playoffs, and hopefully he and the rest of the guys can lead the Grand Junction Rockies to a crown. The last night's or Tuesday night's game was not without any controversy. I don't know if you read the article on the Grand Junction Sentinel website.
Patty Arnold.
By our friend Patty Arnold.
Article, of course.
Yeah, great article from Patty, but an interesting one. Hunter Stovall, who is one of the big bats on that team, was hit by a pitch or wasn't hit by a pitch, checked his swing, and in the annals of being hit by a pitch, like Don Clendenin and showing the black from your shoe polish on the ball, Hunter Stovall undid the tape that was on his wrist in order to show the umpire that indeed he was hit by a pitch and was entitled to his base. The umpire changed the call.
Yeah, I liked Patty's description of that because she mentioned how intense and furious he was at the initial call, which was foul ball, and that he methodically unwrapped the tape. And then you could sort of feel the drama unfolding in the article. And then finally, the umpires see the mark on his arm, and they award him first base, which you don't see that often. I mean, to actually change the call right there is great.
Right. It's and in case anybody isn't quite as familiar with minor league umpires, they work their way up just like the players do. And these guys often, they don't have days off like the players do. And the most challenging thing for umpires at these lower levels is you get your assignment and you go, but it's not like you have an apartment. You are living out of your car or truck or whatever throughout the season. So these guys, no doubt, are also ready for the season to end, even though it is a short season for them.
Yeah, and then the major league umpires do the same thing. They're always on the road, but you know, their salaries and per diems are a little bit higher. So it's a little bit of a smoother summer.
And the umpires have also collectively bargained time off and things along those lines. But yeah, I was watching the Dodgers and the Reds yesterday while I was working. I was probably one of about 10 people in the country to be watching the game, but there was a, speaking of umpires changing calls, I don't remember who it was on the Dodgers, Yasmani Grandal, fly ball to right, and a young fan stuck, as in Jeffrey Mayer, stuck his glove over the fence, made a clean catch, brought the ball back. The umpires got the call right. Of course, the right fielder for Cincinnati went, hey, what gives? They sent Grandal back to second base, but usually what you see on a ground rule double or a fan interference call is there was a runner on first, they make the decision, okay, two bases and you're done, and they sent the runner from first all the way around. So sometimes you have to make the right judgment call, of course. And I will correct myself on the Fisher Cats, too. The Fisher Cats have won Game 1 and Game 2, and so can now clinch the title with a win at home on game 3, which is this Friday. So good luck to them. This will not help them sell any tickets.
No, it won't, because it will first air Saturday morning.
It will air Saturday morning unless the throngs who listen to the podcast listen. But, hey, good luck to the Fisher Cats. And one more win, and they bring home an Eastern League crown. And then thinking about some other stuff around here, we are in the midst of all kinds of crazy sports going on. School is back in session. So you have everything from football to soccer to golf to cross country, not just at the high school level, at the junior high level, as well as club teams. So sometimes it can be a bit of a science getting your kids from point A to point B to point C. But parents are doing it in town, and we had a chance to look at some of the golf results. Bedford with a couple wins earlier this week. One at Rochester Country Club, where they beat second place Spalding by 15 strokes. And then a closer match on Tuesday at Brentwood Country Club, where they beat Concord by 3 strokes. But the medalist for Bedford on Monday, CJ Ledoux, who was the state championship last year, shot a 36. And then Stoughton Bell shot a 35 at Brentwood on Tuesday, while CJ shot a 38 the next day. So we had been hoping to have Dan Colburn, the coach of the golf team, on this week. Just couldn't get the schedules to line up. So one of these weeks we'll have him out. But how does it make you feel as a grown man who takes pride in his golfing and golfs a lot to have these kids shooting these low numbers?
Well, it takes me back to my days in high school. And one of the nice things about most golf matches in high school is that they're only 9 holes, and so you don't get that fatigue on the back line, on the back nine, like you do, you know, when you're playing 18, whether it's at that stage or as an adult. I mean, the last time I went out, I shot a 37 on the front. We don't need to talk about what I shot on the back,
but 70, it was 73.
It was a lot
nice round.
It was a lot different story, and so you know, you don't have to deal with that fatigue factor. But you know, I noticed with the golf team scores that they've been trending in the right direction. Their first two matches, their team total was 200, and now they've been down in the low 190s, and they're undefeated at this point. So exciting start so far for the golf team.
Golf team trying to pick up another state title, and football currently ranked second in the state.
In the power poll?
In the Union Leader power poll, a 44-3 win over Concord this Friday night. They face Goffstown Friday night at home as well. Ryan Toscano, 15-yard touchdown in that game. And Matty Lucantoni, 6 of 7 PATs. I'd won her in my fantasy league. And a 31-yard field goal as well for Matty.
Yeah, well, maybe that'll be the only miss of the season. A pretty terrific start, making 7 of 8 kicks in that one and being perfect in the opener.
So I guess speaking of football and kicking, you and I, in week one, no less, in a 12-team league, with the Harpoon softball guys, you and I went head to head in week one. And what are the odds?
What are the odds?
Yeah, you can't write that stuff up. And
I've already forgotten what happened.
I beat you
in the last minute of the Monday night game at about 1:30 in the morning.
I don't even know how it happened. What happened?
It was down to the final possession. The Rams had the ball inside the 5-yard line against the Raiders. They're comfortably ahead. And it all came down to Does Sean McVay want to call a great play to get the Rams into the end zone, or does he not really care? Is he going to keep the trick up his sleeve until later in the season when he really needs it? So they run some vanilla play. They get stopped inside the five, and out trots Greg Zuerlein to kick another field goal and have you beat me in the last minute by less than 2 points.
You know what's really kind of sad? So as a kid who grew up in Southern California, as a Rams fan, like the days of Wendell Tyler and Pat Hayden and Vince Ferragamo, and so I used to wake up. So first of all, I'd watch the games on Sunday when we could, when they weren't blacked out. And then wake up on Monday morning, and I still remember it vividly, like being the age that my kids are and being just mad if the Rams didn't win. But I still had to read every word about it in the paper and know everything about what happened in the game. And all it just goes to show you how much things have changed. First of all, the Rams moved and decided I hated Georgia Frontieri for Frontier, I think, as she changed her name to be later, for taking my team away.
And Eric Dickerson.
And
those were the days, right?
I was fine with the Eric Dickerson thing because that turned out to be a good trade. Like, the team got better when they dumped him for a bunch of draft picks. As much as I loved Eric Dickerson, the team got better when they accumulated a ton of picks and the team just got stacked. But they left. I went from reading every word and just being a sponge, soaking up as much as I could, to all I did was get on the Yahoo site on Tuesday morning and go, oh, look, I won.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first that I've heard about this.
Yeah, I was sweating every play, and you wake up with that gift in the morning. That's fantasy football for you. But
it's the same thing. Like, I used to sit there and handicap the whatever, UTEP, Tulsa basketball games, and I'd be up in Kansas City until 12:30 in the morning because I had given the over.
Right.
And this was back before every game was streamable and you could get everything, and like the dude who's doing the ESPN Game Center like passed out in his nachos and hit a button too many times, and you're like, all right, I'm over, I'm going to bed. And then you wake up the next morning, you realize you didn't win anything because all of your picks lost because the guy's finger hit the space bar too long.
Yeah, it's funny.
And then
how
I realized, like, why am I doing this anymore? Like, this is out of my hands. As keyed up as I want to get about this, this is completely out of my hands.
Yeah, it's funny how technology has improved so much that you have almost ultimate faith in the real-time stats that you're getting. But occasionally they're wrong.
Yes,
and
true.
So you never can be sure. But I would much rather talk about the end of the first half in the Rams game than the end of the second half. Because there was a...
That was the point in time when you were winning.
Yeah, I was winning. Yeah. Plus, there was a very fun statistical oddity that popped up, and I know you appreciate these as well, and I sent you the screenshot of the Rams' stats with 15 seconds left in the first half, and eventually you realized
what was so special
about this juncture in time. What was it?
It's the state of the utility man in football. all of your pass catchers ran the ball, and all of your running backs all of your wide receivers, whoever was a wide receiver, had also run the ball. It was like this perfect just utility guys, which, I mean, the first thing that I think of when I think of that is shifts in baseball. That this is, okay, yeah, you're the third baseman, but I'm going to play you up the middle because I need to, given this circumstance. And it's the same sort of thing here. Like, all right, Robert Woods, you're my slot receiver. But
I'm going to give you a carry.
We're going to run an end around.
Yeah.
And get you. Well, and knowing Sean McVay, he's not running the end around thinking he's going to get 80 yards out of it. He's running it trying to set something up later in the game that, okay, we've seen this look and somebody bites on it. And sure enough, here's Woods on the end around. But instead, they run a misdirection or draw play and back the other way, bootleg somebody, whatever. But that's all he's trying to set up. And you and I watched this before the show, getting back to Sean McVay. And if you haven't seen it, I haven't spent a whole lot of time on Deadspin lately. I actually was trying to wean myself off of it. They have these cool browser extensions that you can use that when you try to go to a site that you're addicted to, it takes you somewhere else.
Right.
So I went away from Deadspin, and now it goes to my task manager.
But now you're back.
No, well, it's on my phone. It's like it's okay because it's
on your phone. Okay.
But there was a video clip of Sean McVay where they're playing Let's Quiz Him.
Right.
And asking him just random questions. Okay, it was a 3rd and 7 and
in 2016.
In 2016, and he goes, "Oh yeah, like he's throwing out the play, the situation, the culmination of the drive."
He's like, "Oh yeah, that. Oh, you mean week 7 of 2016? Yeah, that was a wheel route to Jamison Crowder.
Like, can you imagine if your brain did that?"
He basically could remember every play on demand from multiple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, he's T-bowing this.
McVay is a magical play caller, just a terrific young coach. The Rams are going to be so much fun to watch this year, offensively and defensively. And this stat line that I highlighted with Lauren, it jumped out because of the skill players that they have. I mean, Gurley is considered one of the top 3 or 4 running backs easily, if not, you know, number one, with Le'Veon Bell sitting on the sidelines. But that's what was so crazy about the end of the first half in L.A. Gurley, Kupp, Woods, and Cooks had all gotten a carry, and they'd all gotten targeted in the passing game, and no one else had gotten a carry or a target. And you just don't see that in today's NFL. Sometimes you'll see 7 or 8 different guys, like with the Patriots. You might see 7 or 8 different guys get a catch
right in
a game. So McVay is just focused on those 4 skill players, and he's running all these different plays, like you mentioned, the ends around, end arounds, the reverses. But then what just crushed this statistical oddity, and we should ask Elias Sports Bureau if this has ever happened for an entire first half, but on the last play of the half, Jared Goff takes a knee, and so now it's ruined. It had been 4 skill players with carries and targets, and now there's a 5th guy with an official rush on the stat board that just, you know, it ruins the first half, really.
Why, it's really why we can't have nice things. So, but what are you going to do? So, we also, getting back to some of the Bedford sports scene, the soccer team, when we were recording the show last week, was in the midst of playing Hanover and ultimately lost in double overtime to Hanover last Friday. But we later will have Coach Stuart Pepper from the Bedford High soccer team joining us.
Thankfully, they've won their other 3 games.
Yes. So it will be a good conversation, but we'll take a quick break. Come right back with Coach Pepper of the Bedford High Boys soccer team. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Always nice when we get back into the fall sports season because we get reacquainted with some of the coaches that we talk to a lot during the fall, and then they recede from view once the fall sports season ends. And one of those is Coach Stuart Pepper, the coach of the Bedford Boys High School team. So, Coach Pepper, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, of course, you've gone into the soccer playoffs as the number one seed the last 3 years. Great regular season performances, but the last couple years haven't turned out so well in the playoffs. How do you prepare the team, both physically and mentally, to get to the next level?
It's a very tough question because, like, you know, we have failed in the last couple of years, but at the same time, you know, I think we've learned a lot from our mistakes. We've learned a lot from not being mentally strong enough to, like, deal with the situation. And I just think being, you know, 1 year older and having some great senior experience, that, well, I think we should be able to handle it a little bit better, you know. And, you know, often as well, I just think soccer is a tough game in terms of sometimes you don't get the breaks, you know. I think that's happened in the last couple of years, that, you know, things just quite haven't gone our way, and it's gone against us. But, you know, I think we should be strong enough, you know, both physically and mentally, to deal with that situation now.
Well, and speaking of strength physically and mentally, you have a lot of senior leadership on the team. Ryan Slijewski is one of the best defenders in the state. But talk a little bit about Ryan, and then who else can we keep an eye out for, who are some of the key names that are either back or newcomers to the program?
So Ryan has been an ever-present since, you know, his freshman year, and he's just gone from strength to strength, you know, both in club soccer and in high school soccer, and he's just physically such a strong, you know, technical player that, like, adds so much, you know, leadership to the field, you know. And I think, you know, this season he's showing that he is such a good leader and such a great role model for the rest of the program, you know. And he fully deserves his acceptance of going to Providence in 2019. So we have other great leaders as well. You know, Austin Edwards is a fellow captain that's just become a real leader within our group and a real sort of comfort to the lads in terms of his leadership and also his guidance in terms of what needs to be done. But also, you know, the other day, you know, we were struggling against a strong Pinkerton team, and Austin took it on his shoulders to actually lead the group and score a hat trick when we needed him. So he's taken that responsibility when we need it. But we have, you know, other good, strong senior group as well. And, you know, there's many we could mention, but there's, you know, I feel very, very confident in the senior group we have.
Yeah, it seems that way. And of course, that helps you continue to get the culture through the program and, sure, and maintain a great deal of consistency. When players change, sometimes you have to change schemes. Have you been forced to make any changes offensively or defensively strategically this year?
You know, we are trying out different systems. You know, we're trying to get more width in our game. And, you know, by having more width in our game, I think we can break teams down more. You know, I think many teams come to, you know, to Bedford especially and get 11 players behind the ball. And by getting greater width in our schemes, that we're going to actually, you know, break down teams, you know, a lot more and spread them out, you know. So, you know, that is one strategy we're trying. But, you know, I think our players are so sort of tactically sort of strong, you know, from their experiences from club soccer and from high school, that we can adapt, you know, and adapt, you know, depending on the team we're playing and what we need to do. And often we'll change our system of play, you know, two or three times within a game if we have to. So I think we're very flexible, you know, and we'll, you know, that's one of our strengths, I think.
Well, Coach, you probably saw every offensive and defensive system that's out there back in your playing days. Tell us a little bit about your days playing semi-professionally over in Europe.
So yeah, I started young actually, and you know, when I was a young lad at Dover Athletic, you know, and you know, it was a great opportunity for me. I was a 17-year-old boy, you know, in the youth team, and you know, just starting college, and basically, you know, Dover, you know, took the gamble of, you know, putting a young lad in playing with these seasoned, you know, ex-professionals, and it was a great opportunity for me to learn, you know, with these, you know, these seasoned players. And you know, it was a, you know, it's something that happens a lot in Europe. You know, if you're good enough, and then they'll put you in, and you'll have the experience to play with these older guys. You know, and I was playing with a guy in centre midfield, you know, called Dick Tiedemann, who had 500 games for West Ham United, and you know, I learned so much, you know, playing alongside this 35-year-old veteran that, you know, I really looked up to, and it was just a great way to learn the game, you know, playing alongside players of that experience.
What about your coaches back in those days? Is there anything that you picked up with those experiences that has shaped the coaching style that you have today in Bedford?
Yeah, I just think my first coach, you know, was pretty sort of courageous in his decisions in terms of going, you know, with his beliefs and going with younger players if he didn't thought they were good enough, and being flexible in his systems, and you know. And, you know, also I found out that he was prepared to play for players in different positions, you know, and meant that I took that on board, and, you know, I got the experience of playing in different positions. I think it made me a better player, and I think it makes the team better when we're flexible in that way. And I think we bring that to Bedford. We have so many players that can interchange their positions and, you know, feel comfortable in their positions. And I think it helps the team because we have that experience of understanding, you know, what we need to do together.
We're joined by Coach Stuart Pepper, the coach of the Bedford boys soccer team. And one thing the fans may not realize is that sometimes you have to recruit your own players. There are a lot of wonderful opportunities these players have to go to prep school, academy soccer, you name it. How do you try to make it the atmosphere as welcoming and as nurturing as you can for the players to continue to grow their abilities?
Yeah, and you know, I remember talking about this last year, you know, playing for your high school is not just being, you know, playing good soccer. It's being part of a culture and an environment where we have so much fun together. You know, we have the experience of friendship. We have the experience of representing your town, the experience of walking down the hallways, you know, representing a really cool team that's like, you know, that does things in a classy way. And I think, you know, players that actually come into it, you know, we've got some academy players that have come back or have come for the first time are really enjoying that experience of being part of a proper club and a proper team and being, you know, invited to be part of that, you know. And it all starts with the families as well. I think that families help out. We have pasta parties and we have, like, you know, a really good way of, like, inviting people to enjoy themselves. And I think, you know, it's an experience they'll remember for the rest of their lives, and it's an experience that, you know, I'm glad we can give all these, you know, young lads.
Makes it sound like a lot of fun, too. And speaking of players, there are a couple who came back to you after playing Academy last year, the Statiris brothers. So far, just reading recaps of games, you've seen the names Nate and Jake in there. What roles do you envision both of them playing on this year's team?
You know, firstly, they've got to prove themselves, you know, to me and to their peers as well, that, you know, they're ready to play. You know, and we have, you know, Aidan Wishart is a very strong goalkeeper. We have some strong midfield players and attackers. So, like, first and foremost, they've got to prove to the group that, you know, they're ready to take a leadership role and ready to come on back on board. So, you know, I think they're working hard. I think they're proving, you know, lots of good qualities, but they're still, you know, have to prove themselves and to their teammates that they're ready to play. So it's a challenge for them, and it's a challenge for the rest of the players. You know, but we, you know, really appreciate them coming back, and we look forward to, like, using their skills to lead us to a championship, hopefully.
So we are with Coach Stuart Pepper, the coach of the Bedford High soccer team, and tell us some new names the fans might not have heard about yet, some up-and-comers, and do you have any younger players, any hotshot freshmen who have just emerged on the scene?
So, you know, we have, like, an experienced senior coming from the academy that's not played a game for us before this season, called Quent McDonough. You know, he's going to be a really strong defender for us and bring lots of leadership. You know, so he's someone to look out for, I feel. But, you know, we've got some strong sophomores that are really, like, embracing their experiences. You know, James Poshman played as a freshman last year. He's now taking a real leadership role in midfield. You know, we have a lad called Danny Flanagan, Matty Flanagan, sorry, that is just played outstandingly well, you know, and there's other sophomores that are contributing on and off the bench, you know. So, you know, we have got some talent in the freshmen, but they're nurturing their talent, you know, with the freshman teams and JV teams, and I feel that we have the right blend, you know, of young sophomores and experienced, you know, juniors and seniors that are going to prove the way. We've also got this lad called Vitor Rodriguez, who moved to Bedford in his sophomore year last year from Brazil, you know, and basically, he's just moved into the community. He had to learn the language. He had to learn how we play, you know, soccer in a different way in America. And he had a great season with the JVs, and now he's started really well. I think he's got 5 or 6 goals and 5 or 6 assists already. And I think he's going to be a very exciting player to watch as a junior.
You said a Brazilian soccer player moved into Bedford.
It was so unbelievable, yeah. Can you believe that?
It's like, what are the odds? Yeah, sometimes you get lucky. I feel like, though, if he's going to be a Brazilian soccer player playing up here, he needs one name.
He does, you know. And we call him Victor, actually. I don't know how that starts, but, you know, his name's Vitor, but we call him Victor. I think we should just call him Victor and put his name on his shirt in that way.
It's... Well, we're certainly looking forward to getting out. We had the opportunity to go out, what was that, a week and a half ago, and watch the girls' team play. Right. They had a nice 3-1 win over Merrimack. They're a lot of fun to see, a lot of speed, coupled with a lot of finesse and then some right. good defense. And it sounds like you have a similar mold here, not to mention some new players that are coming on the pitch for the Bedford High team.
I think so. You know, I'm very excited with the group, and you know, more than anything else, I'm excited about the way that they've, you know, gelled as a group of young men and support each other. I really think that the team spirit is better than it has been, you know, in a number of years. And I think they're really buying into what we need to do. And, you know, I think maybe we've fallen down by the fact we haven't been a strong enough team group, you know, compared to other groups out there. And I think that's going to be a big difference this year as well.
What upcoming games do you have in the next week or so? What's on the calendar for the soccer team?
We have Londonderry next. We have Wyndham tomorrow. You know, which we're excited about. Londonderry, National North, and Winnicott. We have 3 games next week, so they're going to come thick and fast. But You know, I think all the games will be a challenge, and you know, we're planning to get, you know, all our group on the field and get them experience that we're ready for the playoffs in 6 weeks' time.
Wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you, as always, for the time.
Cheers, mate.
We know we've pulled you away from your lunch period, so go take a break, and we'll talk to you soon, and see you out there on the field.
Thanks very much for having me. Okay. Take care. Cheers.
Wonderful.
Good luck, Coach. Thanks.
Thank you, Coach.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
That was Coach Stuart Pepper, the Bedford High boys soccer team. And we'll take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and nice to hear from Coach Stuart Pepper. He was actually, I'm 99% sure, he was one of the first guests on the first show. Back when I really didn't know what I was doing. I just, everything's in degrees. I still don't know what I'm doing, but he's a fun guest.
Yeah,
just,
absolutely.
Just hearing him talk about it, he's a passionate guy, and just brings a smile to my face, loves what he does. And I can't wait to go watch these guys play, particularly given some of what he's saying about some of these guys. And I almost feel like he's kind of doing a Lou Holtz a little bit, like sort of underselling some of these things.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I go, what? A Brazilian soccer player just moves into 03110.
Yeah, there's an international international flavor to this year's team that
it's awesome.
Exciting with his roots in England and the transfer last year. And, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he's off to such a hot start, because when you're learning a language somewhere else, the being on the pitch has to be like your sanctuary. I mean, he's got to be so excited and happy and free that he's out playing soccer, the thing he's done his whole life. So he's got to be a great addition to the team.
Yeah, you would figure that has to be a lot of fun. Trying to see, his name is Victor Rodriguez.
Well, no, it's Victor.
Yes, okay. And Austin Edwards was the one who had the hat trick. So yeah.
We like the one name names here on this show on Fox on Sports that start with V. Victor, yeah. And Vinny.
Yes, the microwave. Well, and my car is named Veronica.
See?
Sitting in the parking lot.
There we go.
The question is whether I'll be able to actually drive it home, but
you got here. That's all that matters.
I got here. That's all that matters. So, the world of baseball, and I was shocked when I read this, because I would have thought that it had happened somewhere in the last 72 years, but it is not. The Red Sox won 100 games.
Yeah.
I am shocked that it hasn't happened, though.
I know, because they've won the World Series multiple times.
Right.
But first time since 46, I believe.
Yes.
And they hit 100 last night. Price went 7 scoreless. They won 1-0. And they're the first team to clinch a playoff berth. So they're kind of like Veronica. Their first thing is just got to get there. You got to the station.
I got here.
The Red Sox got to the playoffs, and now it's on.
The Red Sox are in the playoffs. I do really like it. Free agents tend to go one of two ways in Boston. Either it's an unquestioned success, where it's J.D. Martinez or Chris Sale, who wasn't necessarily a free agent. But you either tend to succeed, or you go into the mold of lackey, Carl Crawford.
Ouch.
Like, you are just a complete and utter mistake as a signing.
Ouch.
And I think some people were looking at David Price and saying, well, where's Price going to go? Well, particularly after the Fortnite thing that happened earlier this year. Well, he can pitch. Dude can legit change speeds, pitch, make guys look foolish. And he is, Sale's your one, but Price is a 1A.
Absolutely, and it's nice that he's back performing that way, because he's had some ups and downs. And since Sale has been in and out of the lineup with his injuries, it's crucial that Price is the 1A. So they're coming together on the mound. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that they've just gotten 100 wins with 46 losses. So it has been 70 years since they got to 100. And if they win 6 more, they're going to set the team record for 106 wins, and they've got 16 games left in the season. If they win out, they're going to tie Seattle for the best record ever. Seattle in 2001 had 116 wins.
Yes.
So all they have to do is win out.
That's all.
That's it.
But you don't want to do that, though.
Right, right. It's, I mean, you want to save those streaks for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I tend to have far more, with my limited coaching experience, I tend to have far more constructive conversations with teams after a loss, particularly because now you go, okay, what can we work on? A, B, C. It's harder to have that conversation after a win because everybody's like, "Ah, what does he know? Like, we just won.
Right.
Like, dude, leave us alone."
Right. And it's been shown so many times. I mean, when the A's won 20-plus in a row that year, they didn't win the World Series.
That was an anomaly. That was a weird year.
When Seattle won 116 in 2001, they didn't win the World Series.
That was just the Seattle thing.
But you know, hearkening back to that Seattle team of 01, it got me thinking, we got to do a little fun baseball quiz here.
All right.
Quiz the Fox.
Jay Buhner.
So the quiz is, I didn't know what number to pick, but just offhand, I thought, all right, let's see if you can name five position players, five hitters from that 2001 Mariners team that won 116 games,
mm-hmm.
and three pitchers. Because it's 17 years ago.
Oy.
Back then, you probably knew eight hitters and eight pitchers, but let's see if we can go to the Wayback Machine, what you can come up with.
I know Ichiro was on that team, so that's one.
There's one.
Two, I said Jay Buhner, but I don't know that Jay Buhner was there.
Nope.
Ken Griffey Jr. was there at that point.
No, he was done.
He was gone?
He was gone. Oh, you know what? Jay Buhner was on the bench. All right, so we're going to give you Jay Buhner. You're at two already.
Yeah, I feel like George Costanza. I can't believe you traded. How could you trade Jay Buhner? Okay, so.
DH. Famous DH.
Oh, Edgar Martinez. That's
there,
easy.
There you go, Edgar Martinez.
Okay, so I'm trying to work my way around the diamond. 2001 Mariners, and I am...
This is a good way to do it, to work your way around the diamond.
But I'm just blanking. Like, well, I'm going, oh, Mark Langston, no. Joey Cora, no.
The first baseman wore a helmet defensively.
Ricky Henderson played with a guy who wore a helmet defensively.
Yes, he did.
That's Olerud.
John Olerud.
Why did I forget he was a Mariner ever?
See, that's what happens when it's 17 years ago.
But I just remember him being a Met and a Blue Jay, but not a Mariner.
Yeah.
But I guess it makes sense. I mean, he's a Washington State guy.
Yeah, towards the end of his career.
So, all right, that was a gimme, though. That's an easy one because there's only one guy who did that, even though Ricky Henderson thought there were two, allegedly.
There's two other guys in the starting lineup who I think are almost household names. The guy at second base, if you want to continue around the diamond, was...
Was it Alomar at second?
Nope. It was somebody else from another famous baseball family.
Where did I come up with that?
This second baseman's brother is now a manager in the major leagues. Everybody in his family was a manager in the major leagues.
But he hasn't been.
His brother is managing the Yankees. Currently.
Oh, Brett Boone.
There you go. Brett
That's
Boone.
Weird.
There's five for you. There's five position players.
Yeah, but the pitchers are just another matter entirely. Like, I just want to go, oh, yeah, Rick Honeycutt, Mark Langston. Can I give you whatever random Mariners that I could think of? Pitchers on that team. The weird thing is, like, if I'm thinking about major league players, closers are one of those things. Like, when you watch a highlight from years ago and you go, that's right, it was Keith Foulke.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'd forgotten about him. Brad Lidge, who's he? Like, those guys have, they have, like, all the shelf life of an NFL running back.
Yeah, some of them really do. They're on top of the game for three or four years.
Yeah. I digress. Jeff Nelson.
Jeff Nelson is number one. There you go.
That's weird.
He went straight to the bullpen.
I went right to the bullpen.
The guys.
God, it's going to make me mad. Sasaki. Cass Sasaki was the closer.
Yes. He's not one of the guys I predicted that you would have gotten. I mean, you've gone deep into the bullpen.
Because the Mariners are notorious for not having Hall of Fame guys.
Well, they have one on this roster who should be in the Hall of Fame if he's not. I'm not sure if he is yet or not.
We're talking pitchers and obviously starting pitchers. Oh, Randy Johnson. No. Was he?
No.
He was a Diamondback that year. I'm like staring at the clock like, hey, are you going to provide me answers up there? It was not Randy Johnson.
Another ancient lefty.
Yeah, Steve Carlton? No, I'm kidding.
the lefty who ended up being the oldest pitcher.
Jamie Moyer?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Jamie Moyer. There you go. You did it.
There's three. Wait, now I got to look, though.
Jamie Moyer went on to play until he was 49 years old. He was 49.
He was the only player ever to draw a major league paycheck and Social Security at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
That record was since tied. So, all right. Yeah, I mean, this is just a bizarre team, though. Mike Cameron was in center field. Al Martin was in left field.
Cameron is the other guy who I thought you might get.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have pulled that out. Yeah, it's just such a random team. Stan Javier.
The pitchers.
Oh, God.
Freddie Garcia.
Yeah.
Was their ace. And then I was gonna give you the Red Sox farmhand, the guy who came up with the Sox that a lot of people in New England know, Aaron Seeley.
Yeah.
He's another name.
Yeah. It's just a weird team. Like, it's when you look at it, it's just shocking. Freddie Garcia, Aaron Seeley, Jamie Moyer, Paul Abbott, John Halama. I pulled Kaz Sasaki out. I don't know where. Arthur Rhodes was on every team in the history of baseball ever. So, I mean, that makes sense. I don't know where Jeff Nelson came from. Brett Tomko is a Southern California guy. He's from Villa Park. So, you and I are the only ones who really probably are going to get a kick out of that. Brett Tomko also pitched for every team in the major leagues. 14 years, he pitched for, what, 10 teams? So, yeah, 11 maybe?
Yeah, I thought Arthur Rhodes was another one you might get.
Arthur Rhodes is tough because, like, your brain plays tricks with you because you can literally see Arthur Rhodes in every uniform because he played in all of them. So, it's, yeah, that was fun. Let's remember some guys.
Quiz the Fox.
Yeah. Arthur Rhodes played on, I guess this is life when you're a lefty. Like, Arthur Rhodes finally left the major leagues on his ninth team, St. Louis, in 2011 at the age of 41. Is LaTroy Hawkins still in the major leagues?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Still pitching for somebody.
So back to this.
But I just, you think of dudes who just kind of catch on.
Right.
As the, I'm just going to get one out of the bullpen. But it's fascinating. Sometimes you go back and you look at the guys who have the Tomkos and the Arthur Rhodeses and the LaTroy Hawkinses. And it's like cutting rings on a tree if you look at their stats and you go, God, I didn't ever realize that there was a minor league team in blank.
Right.
You almost killed your computer there.
Almost. Well, speaking of minor league teams, I wanted to talk a little bit about baseball and money.
Yes.
The updated payroll information just came out at the big league level, and it jumped out at me that the only two teams over the luxury tax this year are the Red Sox, and that investment has been paying off, and the Nationals, where it certainly hasn't paid off, and they've traded away half their roster. But the Yankees are actually under the threshold for the first time in many years. So that's the update at the big league level. At the minor league level, some interesting money being spent related to the Red Sox farm system, where Worcester just approved a new stadium deal that's going to cost just over $100 million. And the Red Sox AAA team in Pawtucket is going to move to Worcester in 2021.
Which will be fun.
Yeah. That's a big change.
I mean, that's a ways away. It is a big change. And historically, I mean, you think about the Paw Sox and their place in baseball history, as it were, the longest game in baseball history, them taking on Rochester way back when. Like, that is an iconic franchise. But ultimately, Worcester made a better offer, and Pawtucket is relocating, or the Paw Sox are relocating up there. And it, I'm curious to see what will happen. You know, Worcester has been for years an independent minor league team on and off, playing at Fitton Field, which is Holy Cross's field. But so obviously they wouldn't have an independent team at that point.
Right, and it really is a long-term relationship. The Paw Sox have been in Pawtucket for a long time, and when they move to Worcester, it's going to be on a 30-year lease. So they're moving there for the foreseeable future, and there's been a debate about this type of investment because you just never know with that much money being put into a team, and it's going to be the record stadium price for a minor league team. There was just a couple years ago, apparently, there was one in Nashville, and that only cost $65 million. I mean, these numbers. Yeah. Well, I mean, for it to be 65 and now 100, that just shows you the bidding war that started to take place between Worcester and Pawtucket. So you just got to hope for the Worcester community that all the development they're going to do around the stadium with the restaurants and the hotels will pay off. And the team can flourish there, and it can be a really dynamic improvement to the city.
Well, your only real chance to make it work is if it somehow that's a huge sum of money to throw at a minor league stadium. Somehow you have to make up for that with guests coming into town, people buying dinner by the ballpark, you name it. There has to really be an economic renaissance downtown in order for it to make it worthwhile. It's a big gamble, and for better or for worse, the people who are making the gamble at this point aren't going to be around when it either pays off or doesn't. And, I mean, that's kind of been the issue with so many minor league and major league sporting stadium deals is that the ramifications are so far down the road that there's a lot to deal with in order to determine whether it was a good or a bad deal. Short term, it's always a good deal when or at least it looks that way, but then who's going to wind up paying for it? Like in Kansas City, the big thing was they basically made it so that if you were going to rent a car, if you came into town, if you were from Kansas City, it was cheap. But if you were outside of Kansas City, like there were all kinds of taxes and fees going to paying for the Royals and or the Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead Stadium improvements. So I don't know. I'm not
nobody knows. I mean, the economics tough. Professors who weigh in on these things don't know. They often say that the economic impact for something like this is at best sort of a push. Right. You don't really get...
That's what you hope for at the best is a push. You're spending $100 million, I mean, that's just...
Right.
Monopoly money.
Right. Well, the thing is, for this particular transaction, the Paw Sox becoming the Woo Sox, they're gonna pay $1 million in rent every year, and they're paying $6 million up front. So over a 30-year lease, that's $30 million in rent, $6 million up front. So that's $36 million out of the 100. So, the city is hoping that the tax revenues from, the hotel rooms and the restaurants and all that will end up making it be a viable investment.
But not to go all crazy on math, $1 million 30 years from now isn't worth what $1 million now is worth. And the team has to, they're going to have to bond it out, of course.
Yep.
So they're not paying $100 million up front. Somehow they're financing that through municipal bonds. Craziness. So anyway, boy, did we go down a weird road.
Check back in 30 years and we'll give you the update on that.
Yeah.
On that investment.
I will be 75 years old and hosting Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I just wanted to take a moment and, is this our closing segment?
No, I don't think so.
No, this isn't our closing segment. So I'm not going to take a moment and do anything except say we're going to take a break, come back with Maddie, Luke, and Tony of the Bedford High football team. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen. And our special guest today is last week's Athlete of the Week, who is no doubt blushing on the other end of the line, Maddie, Luke, and Tony, a three-sport athlete at Bedford High School and the varsity kicker on the football team. So, Maddie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So this year you've been terrific during games. You made all of your kicks so far. How much practice time do you spend each week with your center and holder working on reps just to get ready for game day?
Well, at 10 minutes after every, towards the end of every practice, we have a time that's PAT time. And we just focus on kicking. We go to hash marks. We back it up. We just practice PATs and stuff, and so that's just like part of our practice. But then sometimes I'll pull over my holder and like the snapper, so we can do like a couple practice ones before that. But it's kind of hard since they play positions and they're like always on the field. But whatever chance I get, yeah, I get practice holds.
Now, Maddie, tell us about your routine during game day when you go out onto the field for your next kick. Take us through the routine of setting up the kicking tee to all the way through making the kick.
Well, first, when I pick my spot, I just set it down. I try to aim the tee towards like the middle of the goal post, and then I just take my 3 steps back and my 2 steps over and just keep my head down and kick through the ball.
What about if it's really windy out? Do you adjust the aim for the wind?
Yeah, I try to sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's like hard in the moment, you know, like if there's wind, but yeah, I do my best to take that into consideration.
Now, Lauren and I are curious about the kicking tee itself. Is there a spot on the tee where the holder is trying to place the ball?
I just like tell them where I like it, which is a little right of the tee and a little back, and it's the ball is like tilted a little right, and my holder does a really good job of following through with that.
So, and when you say it's tilted to the right, is the which side is the top of the ball facing? Is the top of the ball facing towards the left?
The top of the ball is facing towards like my holder, which is like on the right side of me, like looking at the goalpost.
Gotcha. Now, what about the mental side of kicking? What are you doing mentally on the sidelines to prepare for each kick? Do you visualize the ball going through the uprights? Is there anything else going through your mind?
Yeah, like when I see my teams like either in field goal range or about to get a touchdown, I just get physically prepared. So like I stretch out, I do like a couple of jumping jacks to get like my heart pumping, and then I mentally visualize myself like making it, because if you have like a bad thought, it like usually comes to fruition, which is like not really good. So I try to stay positive, and then right when we make that touchdown or they call field goal team, I just do my normal routine and just try to make the best of it.
Well, we've certainly been impressed watching you kick here in the first two games, and you know the announcers have been praising your dependability of making all these kicks, and so we got to wondering about any role models you've had who are kickers over the years. Have you looked up to anybody in particular?
I would have to say my main role model is Steven Gostkowski for the Patriots, because that guy is just amazing.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in the last game, the announcers referenced you as a weapon, and Gostkowski's a weapon. Justin Tucker's another one in the NFL that I like to watch. He hit a 55-yarder last night with ease. So Gostkowski is a great example.
Yeah, he's amazing. I don't know how he does it.
We're joined by Maddie Lucantoni, Bedford High School three-sport athlete. It is football season, so Maddie is kicking with the football team. And speaking of role models, we talked about kickers a little bit. I'm not quite sure how to put this, but when you're out there, you may be aware, you may not. Little girls are watching your every move. I presume you're aware of it. Does that make it easier or harder to focus that you're the only one on the field?
It actually makes it easier, I'd say, because if they're watching me, I love to be a role model for them, and I just hope that whatever I'm doing out there gets their mindset into being like, oh, I want to do that, or like, oh, that's so cool. So I think it actually makes it easier.
It's interesting, and it's certainly something that as a male athlete, nobody would use me as a role model for anything anyway. Let's just be honest.
Setting picks on the basketball court.
Setting picks on the basketball court. That's it. But the other thing that is amazing about your story is, I mean, there's groundbreaking things in every little piece. The football, obviously, kicking at a very high level, and starting off as the inaugural captain on the inaugural hockey team. But what advice would you give to young athletes who are inclined to play multiple sports?
I would just say keep your head in it and just keep moving forward. It's going to get difficult sometimes juggling those three sports and like school especially, but it is all worth it in the end. And managing your time and doing three sports doesn't not only does it help you physically, but it helps you manage your time. And that's such a great skill used for the future. So I would just say keep your head in it, be confident, and just do what you do.
So, and I know we talked about this a little bit last year, but you alluded to it. And it's a saying that people will use, if you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it, because they'll manage a way. They'll find a way to get it done within the confines of their schedule. How scheduled out are you on a day-to-day basis between practices, homework, any additional workouts? Because, I mean, you need to think too, okay, I need to get myself in shape because football season is going to end and then I'm going to roll right into hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, so my normal day is basically school. Then right after that, I'll have, like, football practice if it's football season, which is 3 hours. And then sometimes I'll have another practice on top of that for hockey. And then I just, by the time I get home, it's, like, super late, and I still have to do homework. And then I go to bed and then repeat the same thing.
Is there, now that you're a senior, is there any break to anything? Is there any chance to take a little bit of a breath?
Not really. It's all the same.
It never ends. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking some time out of your day today. We know it's the middle of the day. You have a little bit of a break from school, but good luck tonight against Goffstown. And I'm hoping that Hanson and I can make it down to the field and cheer you guys on in person.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, anytime.
Pleasure.
Anytime. That was Matty Lucantoni, the senior place kicker for the Bedford High football team. We'll take a quick break and we'll come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, a truncated final segment because we realized we have some other things to get in.
Segment two on day two during the week.
Exactly. And then Hanson's going golfing while I work, I guess, but I really haven't worked terribly hard today. I hope my clients aren't listening to the show. But a handful of things. This is like the cornucopia segment. First of all, the Grant Levine rookie season is over.
It is. Unfortunately, we have an update from yesterday.
Yes.
When we taped the first part of this week's show.
I like how that plays out. The Grand Junction Rockies lose to who's Great Falls now?
They're the champions.
They're
the
Voyagers, but I don't know for whom they are the affiliate. But anyway, yes, they are the champions of the Pioneer League. I know at one point they were the Dodgers affiliate, but let's see. It's not really telling me. They're the White Sox affiliate. So the Great Falls Voyagers are the winners of the Pioneer League. Congratulations to them. Grant had a base hit in the ninth inning.
With two outs. The season on the line.
He was not the beer out.
No, he was not. Yeah.
If you want to know what the beer out is, we're happy to explain. So Grant concluded what I would say was a season that exceeded pretty much everybody's expectations. At least that we have spoken to. A great season for a kid who just turned 19 years old and really made an impact. And there were many people within the Rockies organization and within the greater community of Grand Junction who were very pleased by what they saw. So can't wait to see what the next year holds.
Yeah, I mean, no one can really expect that a rookie is going to hit around 350. He had an excellent season, and I'm glad to see that he hit that single in that clutch situation. That's a great at-bat to be thinking about over the offseason. Gives you a lot of confidence that you came through in the clutch, and he's going to be disappointed that the team didn't win the series, but he just had a phenomenal season. So congrats to Grant.
He did have a great season, and an interesting footnote provided to you by Wikipedia about the Great Falls Voyagers. The Voyagers' name refers to the Mariana UFO incident in August 1950 when Nick Mariana, the general manager of the Great Falls Electrics, which was the original name of the team, saw two spinning objects approaching at a seemingly high speed. He recorded 16 seconds of footage of the unidentified flying objects at Legion Park. Now, the thing is, we look at that and we go, big deal. He recorded 16 seconds of footage. The first thing that my brain goes to is, what do you think he did?
Well, he didn't put it on Twitter.
He pulled his phone out of his pocket, but it was 1950. Where did he get a camera to do that? Just saying. I don't know. Must have been ready. So anyway, craziness. That is why they were the Great Falls Voyagers. They've been many other things over the years, but now they are the Voyagers. And before we sign off the show, last week, and Hanson reminded me that we probably should have done some preparation for this segment, just in general. But I jumped the gun. We named Matty Lucantoni our Fox on Sports inaugural athlete of the week. And this week's is a freshman varsity soccer player named Ashley Bobotis, who busted out within the first, week and a half, 2 weeks of the season, and knocked in her first varsity goal in a win over Pinkerton. That was called to my attention by one of our many correspondents in the field who said, there's your athlete of the week for week two.
Well, see, it's working out.
So, yeah, sometimes you just got to ask the right people. So, so Ashley Bobotis, congratulations. You are the Fox on Sports athlete of the week for this week, week two. I still do think we need T-shirts.
Absolutely.
How awesome would that be?
Let's call up Grand Junction and see if they can make some for us.
I like that. It's not quite the shirt that I'm wearing. I was going to wear that shirt again today if they won last night.
Hey, you know, good luck. You got
thinking that I brought good luck.
Good luck, Charm. You got to keep it going.
I did nothing, apparently.
You tried. Tried yesterday.
It's a nice shirt. I hope that when I wear it next year, it has nothing to do with Grant Levine. Maybe I can get myself an Asheville tourist shirt.
Yeah, it won't. Yeah. It won't have anything to do with him.
Nope.
Just the history books, the record books.
Just the record books. So with that said, wanted to take a moment. Thank everybody here at Bedford 105.1, Harry Kozlowski for all the hard work he puts in, as well as Bill Jennings, Chris Gentry, and Colleen Richardson, who were burning the midnight oil last night at the Bedford Town Planning meeting. And thanks to my co-host, Andrew Hanson, for all of his preparation for the show. And thank you, of course, to you, the listener, for putting up with us for the last hour. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.